Welcome to F1 Coffee Corner, Full Beans. I'm your host as always, Terry, and I'm here to keep you up to date with all of the unbiased, hard-hitting Formula 1 news. So grab your favourite mug of coffee, sit down, strap in and get yourself comfortable to join in the conversation. Because this is F1 Coffee Corner. This is Full Beans, the must-have podcast for all Formula 1 fans. Welcome to this week's episode of F1 Coffee Corner, Full Beans the podcast. I'm your host as always, Terry, and what have we got this week? Well, in terms of the starting lineup, we're going to be looking back at the opening two races of the 2024 season. How have the teams stacked up? What can we expect? What's changed? What's the same? Where are the teams going with this? I'm not going to bore you with, you know, step-by-step results of what happened last time out in Saudi Arabia. We'll touch on that, but we're focused on where the teams are, what it looks like going forward, and what can we expect. We're going to then talk a bit about the driver market and some random bits of news that may have cropped up. And then we're going to come on to the final part, which is going to be a look forward to Australia this weekend in a Grand Prix that normally serves as a, you know, a bit of excitement. I'm kind of hoping so. We need some excitement to get 2024 going, certainly on the track, that's for sure. So without further ado, let's get these formalities out of the way. If you're not already, why not? Hit subscribe. You won't be notified otherwise about when these podcasts drop because I'm terrible at dropping them on random times, as I said before. And also it helps boost my ratings because ultimately I'm just a guy talking about Formula One in my shed with my Lego and my coffee. So I appreciate any help and any support I can get on that front. In terms of everything else, if you want to catch up with the latest Formula One news on a daily basis, head on over to all of the social medias. The social media handles exactly the same, at F1 Coffee Corner. You'll find me on there. And also this weekend, I will be obviously joining Adam Rob on the Fantasy Formula pre-show before qualifying to lock in your Fantasy Formula picks using the technical knowledge that I might have gained hopefully by the weekend. But now on a serious note, that stream is actually going out late on Friday UK time because of the time difference with Australia. So keep your eye on the social medias for that one because it is a different time. And if you're not in it, you can't ask the questions in terms of getting a live answer on the podcast about your all important fancy Formula One picks. So that's the formalities out of the way. Like I say, hit subscribe, hit share, hit like, all those things. And let's grab a drink, grab a coffee, grab an alcoholic beverage if you want to, not if you're driving, because that would just be highly illegal and I don't want to get cancelled. But yeah, grab a drink, sit down, strap in, 25, 30 minutes of Formula One action coming your way. Let's give this week's episode some full beans. Right, so let's go on to teams. And what we're going to do, we're going to take the teams from the top down and we're going to talk about what's happened over the first two races, where they are, what they're doing, what can we expect. Just want to touch a bit on Saudi Arabia and a couple of things on that before I get into it. First point, obviously, Ollie Bearman coming in for Carlos Sainz. Interesting comments from Fernando Alonso after the race when he said that, yeah, Ollie came well, did a good job, taking nothing away, but it's easy to do when you've got the best car on the grid. I still think that Ferrari is the second best car on the grid, but I get what he's saying. In essence, what he's saying is it's a lot easier to come in and do a job when that car is a performing car rather than a struggling car. However, I still don't think you take anything away from Ollie. He came in at last minute, minimal preparation, clearly, you know, hasn't driven a lot of Formula One race distances, certainly not competitive race distances, let's be honest about it. Clearly struggled in terms of like his neck resting on the headrest, did a great job, got some solid points, put himself in a shot window for 2025. Where do I think he'll end up? I think Haas is probably the most likely destination. I can't see anywhere else for him because of those Ferrari Academy ties. But he certainly didn't do himself any harm at all with that performance whatsoever. I kind of would like to see him come under a bit of pressure towards the end of the race with Lewis and Lando chasing, because I feel that that might have seen, you know, what was he like defending? What was he like in those situations? But irrespectively, you got to be there. You got to be able to get the points. He kept out of a wall on a very tough track and a well-deserved driver of the day for Ollie. And it's certainly not last we're going to see of Ollie Bearman in Formula One, I don't feel whatsoever. In terms of the rest of it, we've got obviously the Kevin Magnussen train that was holding everybody up and Nico Hülkenberg nicking that point for Haas. There's been two arguments to this one, hasn't there? There's been a lot of people saying it's very unsporting-like behaviour and how it shouldn't be done. Some others claiming that actually it's, you know, within the rules, it's good teamwork. It shows a team working together to get ultimately a point for the team. My personal view on it is you've kind of got to overtake him. You know, Kevin's in position, whatever the penalties are, he's entitled to hold that position. He doesn't have to give it up in any way whatsoever. And yeah, the new rules, we've given a time penalty of 10 seconds. That's being driven by the drivers, ironically, last year, who said that 5 seconds wasn't enough. So they gave Kevin, obviously, the 2 10-second penalties. I still think the old way was better. You know, when the FIA came onto the radios, or certainly onto the team radios, and said that you had to give the place back, I kind of preferred that, if I'm honest. I think we've made it a bit more too clinical with letting the teams decide and then giving that a penalty later on. I think that one worked okay. I probably preferred it to this one, but then I understand why you've got 10 seconds rather than 5 because of what the driver said. But I also feel that if we're now giving 10-second penalties out for things like overtaking off the track, we need to look at the whole penalties. And for example, Checo unsafe release in the pit lane should be 10 seconds, not 5, because it's actually health and safety. So I think if we look at penalties as a general rule of thumb, we got to apply it across the board, not to selected ones that the FIA want to do. But in terms of the actual position of his car, the defence of his car, all those bits, I'm with Kevin on this one. I think he did a great job. He played the team game, got past the point. It's up to the team to get past him. So yeah, I'm sorry, I'm not buying this unsportsmanlike behaviour. He didn't break any rules on it. So I'm with Kevin and Haas on this one, unfortunately. Everyone else should have found a way to get past him, especially with faster cars. That's their job to do so, and they could manage it. So yeah, there we have it. 1 point for Haas in the bag, and they are certainly delighted about that one. But in terms of everything else, let's come on to the teams. Like I say, we're going to look at the first two races kind of together, where they are, where they're going, what can we expect. So let's go from top down. Red Bull Racing, 87 points. The RB20, how do you come from the most dominant car in Formula 1 history in the RB19? Well, you produce what's looking like an equally dominant RB20, because at social reality, that's what this car is looking like. Now, I hate saying this because people always feel like I'm taking away from Max as a driver, and I'm not. Max is driving supremely well. He's driving with confidence. He's driving within that car. He's absolutely commanding the Formula 1 grid. But he's not under pressure from anyone close by him, and I want to see that. I don't think it would change the outcome of the races. I don't think it would change the outcome of Max winning the World Championship, but I would like to see it, because ultimately everyone wants to see World Champions challenge. Now, this is not a moan on domination in Formula 1. I've said many times, we've seen it time and time again. We've heard it time and time again. It's always been in Formula 1. It's a team that changes, not the actual domination part. And the only question is, how long will it last for before it goes on to somebody else? Because it will end and someone else will take over. And I know we've got declining viewerships and all those numbers being chucked about, but ultimately there is nothing we can do about it. We've got a rule change coming in 2026. We've got an engine change coming in 2026. We know that there's going to be competition there. So actually, it's up to the teams to do a better job and catch Red Bull. But likewise, Max is doing an awesome job. Checo is certainly proven a good number two driver. We'll come on to the driver market a bit later, so don't want to go too much into that. But a solid start to the season from Checo as well. So Red Bull will be delighted. 2-1-2 finishes. You can't argue with that. They can't do any more, can they? Then we come on to Ferrari, 49 points. Ferrari, they seem to have got a car that's slightly better in race pace, but it's slightly compromised on that one lap pace that they were kind of famous for last year. I do think they're the best of the rest in terms of challenging. Do I think they got enough to go to Red Bull? If they've got their development right, they might have, but that is a big if. And ultimately, we need to see what they bring. Ferrari are not known for bringing lots of little upgrades. They tend to, I've said many times on this podcast before, drop a big upgrade at certain tracks. So I'm kind of hoping that they've got this planned out. I'm kind of hoping that Fred's first full season as Ferrari boss is going to stand him in good stead. They've made some key changes. We know that in the background. There's a lot been going on in Maranello behind the scenes. And I'm hopeful that Ferrari might be able to pinch more than just the one win they got last year. Obviously, Carlos is due back in Australia. And we're hearing he's got a late test with the FIA on Thursday, I believe, which will obviously include the, escaping from the cockpit and making sure that he can race fully that way. So I know they've got Ollie there on standby, I'm pretty sure. If not, they certainly got one of the other reserve drivers. They're known to have a few of them. And they'd be looking to get Carlos back in that car, no doubt about it. Third place, we've got McLaren. Interesting that McLaren have kind of snuck into third place. Lot better start to the season than what they had last year, obviously, with the disaster, the opening couple of races last year. They seem to have carried on with their car from last year. It's very much, the MCL38 is definitely an evolution of last year's car.
It's kind of got the same good points and the same bad points, really. But the bad points have been made slightly better. So I think they're going to talk. They've talked a lot about, you know, Andrea Stella. He talked a lot about little and often in terms of upgrades coming to the car. So, you know, taking it sort of a steady approach all the way through rather than that Ferrari approach we just talked about, big upgrades. They are looking in a better position. The next couple of tracks should suit them a lot better. You know, Japan being earlier on the calendar will certainly suit McLaren's style of car. You've only got to look at how it was in like sector one in Jeddah and the way it left that Mercedes for just absolute dust to see how good it is on those corners. So I'm kind of thinking that as we move away from the street circuits, I know Melbourne is technically a street circuit, but you know what I mean. As we move away from those in the next couple of races, we should see McLaren back in the mix. But then don't be surprised if we see him drop off as we get towards a couple of the other circuits, which go back to more street circuits like Bahrain, Jeddah, where I can see him just falling down that pecking order a bit more. So I think we're going to have a very up and down start to the season for McLaren, just based on where the races currently fall into it. But they're certainly be happy with, you know, third place, 28 points, and, you know, crept above Mercedes on that front from the last race. So yeah, good start to the season for them. And I think a lot more to come from that McLaren team. Then we've got that Mercedes team we talk about, 26 points. What can I say about Mercedes? It's a tough one to swallow, isn't it? It's a bit of pill, and the mixed messages aren't helping. So when we came out of testing, there was talk about how the W15 was an improved car. It was telling us what we wanted to tell us in terms of feedback on the track, and we got some ideas of where we're going. And then here we are a few weeks later hearing, actually, no, the wind tunnel correlation isn't right. We're not quite sure on this. We need to experiment with it to make sure the upgrade's on track. It's a story that Mercedes fans are becoming increasingly frustrated with. Yeah, we're in the third year of this now. And, you know, Mercedes are struggling in a cost-cap era. Let's be honest about it. It's a era that isn't suiting them. They're used to spending their way out of trouble. We said this before. They're used to having unlimited budgets. They're used to throwing different paths of development, going off on different paths to get performance and chase it. You can't do that in the current climate. You know, you stick with a concept and you're tied into it. And that's hurting Mercedes. And I'm not sure where they go from here in terms of this. Yeah, the fans are going to be upset with their current performance and the current noise that's coming out of them. I'm not seeing enough in the car to make me go, they're close to unlocking something in terms of a massive jump in pace, which is what they need. So it feels a bit doom and gloom with Mercedes. We know that Imola will bring the first upgrade, as it will for a lot of teams, as we talk about, in terms of the first European one. But then if that wind tunnel correlation data, that CFD data, if that's wrong, you can bring all the upgrades you want, but you end up like Aston Martin did last year. And what I'm starting to find interesting is Aston Martin struggled with their upgrades last year and used Mercedes wind tunnel. And Mercedes are struggling and obviously use their own wind tunnel. Now, is that something with the wind tunnel data isn't transpiring to on-track performance that both of the teams are actually suffering from? Really interesting to start piecing those together, because even though they don't share the data, because you're not allowed to, and they don't do that, it's still the same wind tunnel. And is it any coincidence that both teams are not getting exactly what they saw in the wind tunnel in terms of performance? Interesting one to think about. Coming on to Aston Martin, fifth place, 13 points. How are they doing? I think they'd be disappointed with their start to the season. Last year, they had that massive jump. No one's had that massive jump this year. And they've kind of fallen into this fourth, fifth place, which you kind of expect Aston Martin to be in, but then you kind of get disappointed when, based on last year, we had the challenge for podiums, that massive gain in performance that we had, galvanised the team, galvanised the fans. You know, suddenly we saw Fernando, who'd replaced Seb, popping up on the podium. We haven't got that this year. They kind of seem stuck in the middle, not enough to fight for the podium, but not enough to be in that group that's quite clearly chasing behind. Race pace looks better than qualifying pace. Looking like they're struggling to warm up the tyres, a bit like Ferrari is struggling a bit more this year. Red Bull was certainly struggling to warm up the tyres, but actually they've got enough pace to mitigate that. So yeah, I think Aston Martin, whilst on paper they probably are the sort of fourth, fifth best team, are not going to be happy with that performance. They're going to want to show a bit more. They're going to make sure the upgrades work for them. We know that, you know, Fernando's out of contract at the end of the season. As I said, we're coming to driver contracts in a bit. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting few weeks for Aston Martin to see if they can pull some out of the bag and start challenging, or are they going to be a midfield team Very similar to probably like Alpine were a few years ago. Then we've got Haas with a point in sixth place. Obviously, that point we've touched on with Hülkenberg, with Magnussen playing the defender in Saudi Arabia. So, yeah, it's a point. They'll be happy with that. They kind of play down their expectations start of the year. Had us all fooled in thinking that they were going to be 10th and way behind. Actually, Komatsu's done a good job with the team. They've got a point. They're up and running. In terms of what the development looks like, they're carrying those Ferrari parts. So it's no coincidence that on the tracks they've done well on the first few races, so have Ferrari. Hülkenberg seems to have really great qualifying pace and seems really comfortable with it. They seem to lose it in the race, but not as much as what they did last year, which is surely a sign that Ferrari might just be getting on top of that tyre degradation that hindered them last year, that Red Bull are really benefiting from with, you know, very minimal tyre degradation on that RB20. But yeah, has to be happy with a point. They'll be happy jumping in sixth place. Komatsu will be delighted for that after obviously taking over from Gunther Steiner. Williams, seventh place, 0 points. Williams are going to be disappointed. And the problem I've got with Williams at the moment, we keep hearing these they're not stories from James Vowles, they're updates, I should call them, from James Vowles about how Williams are still in the old times, they're trying their best, etc., etc. You kind of want a bit of optimism. I know James is painting that picture of what's really happening, and it's really crucial that's what's happening. But ultimately, we want to see Williams. I think it's missed opportunities for them. They've, you know, two tracks they would have wanted to score points in, two tracks they certainly had a car that was capable of scoring points in. And for various reasons between the two drivers, they haven't got any. They'll be looking to bounce back in Australia and get some points before heading obviously into Japan as well. Like I say, I expected more from Williams. I think the team expected more. There's more performance to come from the car. They talked a lot about how they've swapped performance out for the aerodynamic package this year, and they I don't think they're quite sure how to extract that. Obviously, they got Pat Farrar on board now, doing some sterling work there, but was late to the party in terms of coming on board and with the issue they had with parts and just getting the car together. It seems like they had a problem very similar to a few years ago where they struggled to actually get the parts ready for the upcoming season, so they haven't really had time to develop it. So don't be surprised if we see a jump in performance from Williams as well. I want to see less of the playing down, we're a team stuck in, you know, the 90s era with our spreadsheets, and let's just get back on track and start actually, you know, banging that drum and getting some points in the back. Eighth place, obviously tied, all these are because they're all on 0 points, is Kick F1, Kick Sauber, as the F1 app calls them. I'm glancing there to make sure I don't miss the team. Apologies for that one, for those watching on the video. But yeah, Kick Sauber, we're calling that one on there. Again, they've got a car that is really terrible in terms of qualifying. Doesn't warm up its tyre as well, but then tends to come alive a bit during the race. So one to watch, but I think the problem is they're being hindered by that qualifying pace at the moment. We know that Joe obviously had the problems he had last time out in Jeddah. And with Kick Sauber, I feel that they've got a car they don't yet understand. James Key has talked a lot about it. They've made a lot of changes with the suspension, with the car. Great news in terms of Audi now taking 100% ownership and accelerating that progress. They're now, you know, pretty much fully Audi owned, and hopefully we see that change next year in terms of the direction the team's taking now that they're going to be a fully fledged Wurz team. What it means for Kick Sauber, it doesn't mean a lot for this season. Next season, we won't see Audi branding before 2026. And we might see some strategic appointments, and we might see some movement in the driver market as they place drivers they want in for 2026. Bear in mind this open market we got during the summer this year, for the end of this year. So yeah, Kick Sauber, it's been an okay start. I expect a bit more. They don't understand their car. They want to get a bit more out of it. And that's pretty much where we're at with it. In terms of the drivers, no one driver has really sort of stood out for me yet. Both drivers need to up their game if they're going to stay on the books for next season. But that's pretty much where we are with them. The biggest two disappointments are coming up in 9th and 10th. So we're hitting 9th first is VCARB, or Visa Cash App RB. You've got Yuki, you've got Daniel, quality drivers. Yeah, whatever people think about Yuki being a paid Honda driver, he's still capable of scoring points. That car, again, is almost like the opposite to the Kick Sauber. It qualifies a lot better than what it races at. The race pace seems to drop it back down the pack and cause problems with it. So I think they'd be disappointed with that. They took a lot of parts on. There was a lot of expectation from them. We kind of expected this Aston Martin leap up in terms of performance. Didn't get it. Haven't had it from the drivers yet. Both have got something to prove. And yeah, it's really disappointing. And I think we can finally put to bed the rumours that they copied Red Bull with the RB19, because that ain't new carbon copy. That ain't new copy and paste at all, that's for sure. So you can tell that it's the aero that they can't get from Red Bull, because I bet right now they would give their right arm to buy the aero from Red Bull for that V-carb one that they got. But I think there needs to be a lot more from both drivers. I think that Daniel, if he wants to play his part in the Red Bull seat, we'll come on to in a minute, needs to up his game as well for that one. But I think we've also got to look at last race. He had that, was it 40-second pit stop that the mainstream media didn't pick up on, which dropped him right down, killed his race off. No one's going to come back from a 40-second pit stop. So I don't think it's all Daniel's fault. And I think he's maybe being treated a bit harshly with what happened in Saudi Arabia. And then we come on to Alpine, which I don't even know where to start with Alpine. They've got management troubles. They've got development troubles. They've got troubles off the track, on the track, whichever way you look at it. They're not showing any signs of really being able to turn it around, certainly for the foreseeable future. I think if you're an Alpine fan, you're going to be in for certainly a long start to the season, maybe even a bit longer. I think the drivers are going to be looking over their shoulder with that driver market coming up at the end of the season, with both of them obviously expired from contracts. They're going to have eyes elsewhere as well based on what they got. So yeah, it's one of those, I'm afraid, Alpine have kind of turned into my Sauber from last year, where there's no real good news. They're just, that's where they are. So with that in mind, that's pretty much my roundup of the teams, where we are of them, first two races, what I think of them, and where I think they're going. So with that in mind, take us to a get a coffee and we'll talk about driver markets. So, driver markets. Now, driver market absolutely exploded with obviously Lewis Hamilton's move to Ferrari, and a lot of people are expecting it to kind of have this knock on and massively, you know, jump into life. And it's kind of the opposite. It's kind of flatlined. And there's a few reasons for that. There's a lot of drivers jostling for position. A lot of drivers want to see what Mercedes are doing with that seat first, what Red Bull are doing with that seat first before committing to their own respective teams. And what that's caused is this blockout, because you've got, yeah, take Fernando Alonso, for example. So Fernando Alonso, he's out of contract at the end of this year. We know he's probably got a 2+1 year. The 1 year is most likely on Fernando's side, because when he signed for Aston Martin, development-wise, where they were, I would say he would have had the 1 year option put in. So he would have a time limit on that to when he can opt into his 1 year. The problem with that is Aston Martin want Fernando, so Fernando knows that. So he's quite happy to sit back and see what's happening with the other teams and what's going on before he commits to, you know, Aston Martin long-term. And Carlos Sainz has been shopping around. We saw that his representatives were with Mercedes. It's natural that Carlos is going to be looking everywhere to get a seat. He hasn't got one. I wouldn't be surprised to see that throughout the season, that he's meeting with representatives from each team who've got a vacancy for next year to try and, you know, keep him in Formula One. Why wouldn't you? I don't think we'll lose Carlos from Formula One at all. I think that there's going to be room for him. Just depends if it's going to be a competitive car where he can actually challenge for, you know, podiums and race wins like he's currently doing. But in terms of the other drivers, you've got obviously the Red Bull situation. Now, Checo, I've been quite a supporter of Checo in terms of saying that what more would you want from him in terms of a second driver. I stand by that. I'm not quite sure what people are expecting from Checo and where they expect the challenge to come from, because Daniel isn't challenging in that V-carb at the moment. Yuki, I still think, is tied into the Honda deal. I don't think that Christian views him as a Red Bull driver. I think he's there purely to tick that Honda box. And we know that's only got one season left to run. So I'm not expecting a challenge from Yuki. Liam, as much as I love to see it, I think that Liam's route in is going to be via the V-carb team, not the Red Bull main team itself. So he might have to play the waiting game. The big challenge now is, do they look elsewhere? We've seen Fernando linked with it. We've obviously seen Carlos linked to it. We know Carlos has got previous Red Bull ties as well. Obviously, the Red Bull ties his dad's got. So that's a link. But I think that Red Bull will want to keep it in-house. And I think that Checo, based on his current performance and based on Daniel's current performance and Yuki's current performance, I think that Checo's doing more than enough to get that contract extension signed. So I wouldn't be surprised if we get to the middle of the European races and get towards the summer. And if Checo's still, you know, second place in the championship, pulling out those 1-2s. I can see Christian just extending him in terms of giving him a new contract, because why wouldn't you? And that's kind of going to put it to bed once and for all. I don't think they go outside the Red Bull stable, like I said. I think they want to keep it in-house. And I don't think the other drivers are doing enough to take anything away from Checo, who's currently, you know, sat second place with all those, with those 1-2s that he's currently had. So, yeah, I can't see much change in that one. We've seen Hülkenberg is being linked to potentially Audi. I still think that teams are just, or press, I should say, are just jumping on that German connection. I've not seen any evidence to back that up yet. I do feel that Haas may be changing the driver. It depends on, obviously, yeah, the direction that Komatsu wants to do, what sort of pressure is Gene Haas being put under by Ferrari to bring a driver in. We all know that Ollie Bearman's like the candidate for that one. So, yeah, is Komatsu going to have to lose one of those drivers in order to facilitate that? In terms of Mercedes, Toto's keeping in his options completely open. He's got an outside bet of Max. I don't think that's happening myself. We have obviously Max's contract, which includes a clause that apparently no one knew about, that Helmut Marko chucked in there, which is, oh, it's just mind-blowing to think that Helmut Marko's written a get-out clause for Max Verstappen in a Red Bull contract that nobody else picked up on. I mean, if you're not already proofreading, guys, come on. That's ridiculous. But that's what we're hearing. That's what is in there. But I don't think that Max is a serious contender to go. I think that's more, you know, just talk, probably to save Helmut more than anything else. But whichever way you look at it, you know, Mercedes keep their options open. We know they've got Kimi Antonelli. They've got all season to decide, haven't they? Let's be honest about it. But it might take all season with his super license points and where he stands. So, yeah, maybe that's what Toto's plan is, to just keep rolling dice and seeing where Kimi ends up in F2, seeing if there's a chance to get enough points, or does he go for a season pro like a Carlos, like a Fernando, to go alongside George? I think George would like someone like Kimi so that he could be the team leader. It's something he's always wanted. It's something he believes that he is. So I can see George kind of wanting, you know, Kimi Antonelli in there if his relationship with Toto is as close as people suggest and he's got influence on it. I think that's what he would be going for, would be my sort of, you know, look to it. Then we come to Williams. A lot of talk about, obviously, Alex Albon. James Vowles kind of shut that down beginning of the season, saying he's under contract until 2025. Obviously, talking about a extension onto his current deal, the clause to invoke, which obviously James Vowles wants to do. Alex himself has been a little bit more underwhelming in terms of his commitment. Has talked about how the team needs to be challenging for points, how they need to be doing better, and that nothing's set in stone. So, yeah, it's interesting to see if Alex has got some get-out clause in there. There is talk of, obviously, Kimi Antonelli going to Williams as a feeder. Obviously, James Vowles was in charge of the young drivers when he was at Mercedes, so he knows Kimi well. In fact, I'm pretty sure that he was one of the people who recruited Kimi into the Mercedes stable. So certainly got a relationship there. He's kind of paid that down over the past couple of weeks, saying, no, you know, it's not a sure given hit that we're going to take Kimi and Williams. It still makes sense to me. It still makes sense for, you know, Williams to do that. I think the knock-on could be that Alex goes to someone like Aston Martin. If Carlos doesn't end up there, if Kimi ends up there. So I think, you know, if you've got Fernando, either retires or goes to Mercedes, I can see Alex maybe moving to Aston Martin in the move there, and then that frees up someone like Kimi coming in. Or they might even want to change Logan Sargeant if he doesn't start performing. But either way, you know, we are in this kind of stale driver market, almost waiting for the top two teams to make their move so that the rest of the grid can actually catch up and sort of, you know, get into where they are, what they're doing, and what that means for them in terms of next season. Because I feel once those two seats are gone, it's going to be all out, pretty much a fight for the others. So that's pretty much it in terms of drivers and news. It's been a bit quiet. We've had a bit on the Christian Horner case. So the latest on that one, I don't want to go too much into it because it's causing quite a horrible feeling online. So it's really hard to report on this because you're trying to keep to the facts on a story that is really important and should be out there, but is given little facts in terms of, you know, what we can report with. And every time you put something up, the amount of animosity on it is amazing. Honestly, it's quite hurtful, some of the comments in there. you know, trying to just report on the news and trying to bring everyone what the latest is. So latest that we've got it as we currently know it, but haven't had it confirmed because we don't get anything confirmed, is that the colleague in question has now lodged an appeal against the original judgment to dismiss the grievance against Christian Horner. So they've now lodged that appeal that they were entitled to do on the back of the Red Bull statement that we heard. We also know there's been a separate complaint into the ethics committee with the FIA on two occasions via a whistleblower hotline and formally by this person, because they feel that it's going to be covered up and they want the FIA to investigate. Whether or not the FIA are going to remains to be seen. They compile a report, send it in, and basically the FIA president, if he's not involved in a case, like he obviously doesn't get involved in the case that's about him, because that would be wrong. But in terms of this one, he basically gets a dossier with some recommendations. But the FIA panel isn't a judgment panel. It can't hand out punishments. It can't hand out any penalties or anything like that. It's purely a, you know, did this person break the codes of conduct? If they did, how did they break it? And what that looks like going forward. So it's not there to pass judgment at all on it. So even if something does happen from that one, we've got that one. We've got obviously Felipe Massa's court case now fully lodged in the courts in London about not overturning his 2008 World Championship result, but overturning it in the sense of financial compensation. A lot of talk about this one, but ultimately what he's looking for the public knowledge and in the public domain that the FIA knew about Crashgate before the end of the 2008 season, and instead of investigating, chose to cover it up. That will then give him an avenue, if he wins that case, to start looking at if he can produce anything sporting-wise in terms of overturning the championship. So I do feel that it's a step forward for him, but I don't feel it's a, you know, it's not one I think he can win. I think it would be settled out of court, personally. I don't think that anyone within the FIA, Formula One management, I don't think they've got, you know, Birney himself even, I don't think they've got an inkling to take this any further than what it is. So I can see Massa kind of getting an out-of-court settlement. I suppose it's just a case of what's more important to him. Is it going to be the money, or is it going to be the dragging everything to court and getting it out in the open? The only thing that really depends on is what evidence he's got. But that's pretty much it in terms of stories. Like I say, it's been a bit quiet in terms of actual Formula One stories. A lot of the latest what we're hearing is just normal sort of chit-chat around things. But with that in mind, let's take a swig of the coffee, have a look forward to Australia and this weekend. So let's go. Australia. So if you're a UK viewer, this is your chance to moan. If you're the rest of the world, I apologise on behalf of all the UK viewers for moaning. They've got to get up to watch a Grand Prix, because I know everyone else does it all year long, and we do it a couple of times and we don't have to moan about it. But for those who don't know, so on the 22nd of March, which is, what day is that going to be? That is going to be Friday in terms of UK. So we will have practice one, which is 1:30 a.m. to 2:30 a.m. in the UK. Practice two, which is 5 a.m. till 6 a.m. And then on the following day, we will have practice three, which is obviously Saturday, will be 1:30 a.m. again till 2:30 a.m. And qualifying will be 5 a.m. till 6 a.m. And the race itself has been brought forward on Sunday to 4 a.m. for UK viewers. So, yep, get ready to see all those posts about people moaning that we've got to get up to watch a Grand Prix. Now, in terms of Albert Park itself, first Grand Prix was obviously held in 1996. We got 58 laps, 5.278 kilometres, two DRS zones, a race distance of 306.124 kilometres. And we've got a fastest lap, or a lap record, set by Sergio Perez in 2023 of 120.235. In terms of tyres, we're going to be seeing the C3, the C4 and the C5 compound tyres. So we've got an outing on the C5, the softest tyres available to Pirelli. So that's going to be interesting. And as a little treat for all of those podcast viewers, I've been sent a book. Shameless plug, I've been sent the Formula One 2024 Bruce Jones book. And this is from Wildbet Publishing. And it tells us all about the tracks. So let's see what they got to say about Melbourne. The magnificence of this long-standing Grand Prix venue is not the circuit itself, but its setting in a park in Melbourne's inner suburbs, just a few blocks from the Melbourne Bay beaches. It's a tongue twister. This means ease of access thanks to a world-class public transport system, while Australia's sports-mad populace guarantees a sellout and ferocious crowd. There you go. The lap begins with a right-left combination that was given a better flow for last year's race. The first heavy braking is for the corner at the end of this short straight that leads on from there. Wider than it used to be, its only real action comes on lap one when the field's still bunched together. The nature of the circuit at either end of the lake that the circuit navigates is the same, namely being very short straights between tight corners. However, the biggest change to the stretch of the lap on the opposite side of the lake to the paddock is that its entry from turn six was made faster for 2023. The slow corners having been removed, it means that a top speed of up to 185 miles per hour or 300 kilometers per hour can now be achieved after the cars have blasted a now more open S's by the sailing club. Then, as with the west end of the lake, the return section around its eastern end, it's medium speed at best. Even with the final two corners having been made less accurate, overtaking is incredibly hard to achieve. As with so many circuits, the best chance remains under braking for the first corner of the lap, although this has been added to by turn 11 now offering a little bit more of an opening for the brave. So yeah, there you go it. That is the Formula One 2024 guide to Melbourne and Australia this weekend. Previous winners, we've got Jenson Button, Kimi Raikkonen, Nico Rosberg, Lewis Hamilton, Nico Rosberg, Seb won it 2 years in a row. We've got Valtteri Bottas, the honorary Australian in 2019, Charles Leclerc in 2022, and obviously Max Verstappen in 2023. I think that's it. That's it. That's your guide to the book. Let's put the book down. Don't like reading from books. Don't like doing scripted stuff. It's well bad, isn't it? So, yeah, so that's what we've got so far. We've got Melbourne coming up. What can I expect? I think that it said in the book, the opening turn one always, you know, raises the heart rate a bit, leaves a lot to be desired for in terms of the bunch going through. So we'll see if anything comes from that. Normally get a couple of retirees there. Obviously, we had the carnage of the red flag situation last year, and the sudden people's eyes on the restart and all of that sort of things going on. So are we going to get the same this year? I don't know for sure. I'm hoping we get a bit of excitement. Like I said, I want to see Max challenge. I get that he deserves to be there. I get he's driving absolutely phenomenally well. And please, please, if you take anything away from this podcast, this isn't a gripe on, you know, Max not being a good driver because the RB20 is brilliant. Far from it. It's Max is driving brilliantly. He's a brilliant driver in a brilliant car, which is creating its utter dominance. But yeah, the rest of the pack, they've got to get their act together. They've got to start catching. They've got to start chasing. Got to start challenging, because it's up to them to close that gap, and they need to do that. And they need to find a way that, you know, Red Bull have found a way, and they need to find a way to close that gap and start challenging Red Bull. Or, you know, they might as well just all give it to 2026, aren't they? But I don't think anybody's giving up at the moment. I just think that Red Bull are just a team which is just producing a phenomenal, phenomenal car. And when you look at them, they're just like a well-oiled machine, aren't they? They're just on top of everything. Pit stop, strategy, everything. You know, it's just, at the moment, everything's just flowing completely perfect for them. So, yeah, nothing to take away from a Red Bull team that is a well-oiled team, if you excuse the Formula One pun. But I'd like to see some excitement this weekend. It'd be nice to see some challenging for the lead. It'd be nice to see some actual close racing at the front. We're getting really close racing in the middle of the pack. We're not getting at the front yet. So that's what I want to see. And with all that in mind, I've taken up far too much of your valuable time with this week's podcast. As always, you know, like I said at the beginning, if you could hit that subscribe button, rank it, whatever it allows you to do on whatever platform you're listening to it on, I would really appreciate it, as I always do, because as I said earlier, I'm just a guy in a shed talking from the one. And yeah, all of you provide me with my outlook and provide me with, you know, a platform where I can talk to people about Formula One, which is pretty amazing, pretty unique. Still get very humbled by it, still get very sort of, yeah, pinch me moments that, you know, so many people actually want to listen to me talk about Formula One. There's an audience out there to talk to. So I genuinely appreciate everyone who interacts with the page and, you know, comes on, talks, leaves a comment, chats, even if we might have a difference of opinion. Yeah, your opinion is always valid and I do like to hear it. What I don't like is this animosity and this hatred that seems to be boiling out through certain subjects at the moment. It's spilling over. That's quite upsetting, and that's where I struggle with that one. But enough about that, because that's a negative and I hate negatives, because life is only positive. You choose your decisions. You choose what you allow to affect you. So this is a positive podcast. And with that in mind, I will bid you farewell. Like I said, if you haven't already, set your alarms for this weekend for some early morning races. Yeah, Fantasy Formula is back on Friday night for your Fantasy Formula picks. I'll be back obviously next week. Catch me on my TikTok live, which I do weekly as well, if you want to drop some questions in there. And also, if you've got anything you want me to cover on the podcast, leave it in the comments. Leave it, yeah, on the comments on one of my videos. Anyway, send a message, whichever way you want to do it. Drop it in there. And if I can, I'll incorporate it in, but it'd be good to get some sort of fan questions in there and answer some topics that you might find interesting on this podcast. So thanks again for listening. Bid you all farewell. See you next week.